From San Francisco, I'm Moira Gunn, and this is Tech Nation. Today on Tech Nation, a special edition of Tech Nation Health, reimagining the future of health and healthcare with the emergence of new technologies. We start with Jim Joyce from Exosome Sciences. They're working on a blood test to check for CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. An NIH study on retired NFL players has shown results. Then RideEye returns with their eye-tracking tests and an expanded range of diagnostics. They're also working with Major League Baseball. Wrapping up, Chief Correspondent Dr. Daniel Kraft talks about disruption in medical care, all brought about by emerging technology. Jim Joyce is the chairman and CEO of Athlon Medical in San Diego, an executive chairman of its subsidiary, Exosome Sciences. It's in the business of looking for exosomes. That's E-X-O-X-O-SOME, S-O-M-E. I asked him, what's an exosome?
Oh, an exosome, if you were a member of the science community and you went back 5 or 6 years, an exosome was considered to be nothing more than cellular debris. With no
junk.
Biological function, just junk. We thought that exosomes were carrying cargo of different disease conditions. And in many cases, like in oncology and even neurological disorders, we thought they were therapeutic targets, that they may have immunosuppressive capabilities or capabilities to help promote other disease conditions. Today, exosomes are therapeutic targets. The consensus is that they're also excellent biomarkers because they're very stable in the circulatory system and they carry the cargo from a disease condition.
So it's going to tell us something about the diseases in your body?
It can tell us a lot.
What kinds of things can it tell us?
Well, in oncology, people are really advancing a lot of work in the exosomal field, looking at the cargo as a means to help create personalized medicine. It can be that tumor-derived exosomes also could be something considered parallel to viral load in infectious disease, where you see the levels of exosomes maybe being a correlate to viral load in HIV or hepatitis C to quantify disease progression or response to therapy. We think in oncology or other disease conditions that exosomal load could be a means to quantify disease progression. And we know in oncology that the levels of tumor-derived exosomes correlate with disease progression.
So how do we measure exosomes? I mean, where are they in my body? That's the real question here.
Right now, it takes very sophisticated machinery and technology that allows us to specifically count different types of exosomes, exosomes that are expressing markers from other disease conditions.
But things are changing.
Things are changing.
Now, tell us what you've done.
Well, we do two different things. You know, the parent company, which I founded, Athlon Medical, its primary focus is to address its therapeutics. It's to address unmet needs in global health and biodefense. And we're very much focused on biofiltration devices that have broad-spectrum capabilities against infectious viral pathogens. And then we're looking to expand the use of these devices towards exosomal targets in oncology and neurological disorders. And a lot of our work at Athlon led to some discoveries on the biomarker side, which caused the formation of Exosome Sciences, which has led to discovery of a very interesting biomarker, an exosomal biomarker that we call a tauzome.
Now, I understand that the NIH funded a very large study, the DETECT study, and you were a part of that. What went on there?
Well, our colleagues at the Boston University CTE Center provided oversight. The oversight was provided by a principal investigator, Dr. Robert Stern. But we were invited to participate to test the biomarker that we had discovered. Again, it's called a tauzome. To look at levels of this particle in the plasma of former NFL players as compared to control subjects.
Now, CTE, what is that again?
CTE is an acronym for chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And oftentimes people confuse the disease condition because there was a movie called Concussion. They think it's specific to a concussion, when in reality, CTE is best associated with individuals who have suffered from repetitive head trauma over long periods of time. At present, CTE has been diagnosed based on autopsies done by the Boston University CTE Center. It's been diagnosed in 97 out of 101 former NFL players. At present, it is diagnosed solely through postmortem autopsy. There is not a means to diagnose it while somebody is living. And this is something that we're working on uncovering. And this is where we think our biomarkers could be quite important.
Well, let's go back to this NIH study out of Boston University. You didn't just look at the football players, right?
No. We looked at individuals between the ages of 40 and 65. And there were 16 control subjects. The controls were former athletes that participated in sports that didn't involve repetitive head trauma. And then the 78 NFL subjects were, again, same age group, but played football. And the NFL group involved 78 subjects, again, between the ages of 40 and 65, that had participated in the NFL and had a history of concussions or repetitive head trauma. So when we looked at the tau zone levels in these individuals, we were really quite astonished. We saw that as compared to the control group, the NFL subjects had tau zone levels on average that were 9 times higher than that of the controls. Additionally, what was very telling, and this was published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease, was that the individuals also were subjected to a battery of psychomotor and memory tests to rate them for cognitive decline. And in general, the higher the tau zone level, the worse they performed in those cognitive decline tests. So now we're working to continue the studies in a larger subject population. We're hoping to kick off what will be the largest study in former NFL players here in the coming months to continue the validation of this biomarker.
I'm fascinated by the crossover between Alzheimer's and the NFL players, because no one says, oh, Alzheimer's, you must have played contact sports, or tell me about your repetitive head injury. This is really a fascinating crossover.
It is. It's very difficult to decipher, too, because we know Alzheimer's, which has been studied since its discovery in 1906, it's today known to be a multifaceted aggregation of amyloid beta, tau protein in the brain, and a multitude of other factors, very much genetically driven, whereas CTE is still very much a new disease. And it seems to be, at this point in time, a lot more one-dimensional, primarily a excess plaquing or aggregation of tau protein in the brain. But this correlation, when we step back and we look at the correlation, plaquing a tau protein, this is considered to be a tauopathy. There's over 20 different tauopathies, including Alzheimer's. So when we step back, we look at this and we think, well, the research is very important and it's very informative. There's so much more that needs to be learned. But what can be applied today that could be important to former NFL players? So we recognize, well, if this is a tauopathy, one of the things that has happened in Alzheimer's disease is the introduction of anti-tau drugs, which are being studied in Alzheimer's patients today. And we think, well, what if chronic traumatic encephalopathy is very much a one-dimensional aggregation of tau protein? Wouldn't it be nice if these players could be qualified for these studies? So we went back and we looked at Alzheimer's patients out of curiosity to see what their tau zone levels were as compared to what we saw in the NFL group. And we saw in the Alzheimer's patient population, whereas the NFL subjects were 9 times higher than the controls, when we looked at diagnosed Alzheimer's patients, 33 of them, as compared to the controls, we saw they were 10 times higher than the controls, but again, just slightly higher than that of NFL subjects. So we hope it's the collection of that kind of data where we can correlate a biomarker between different tauopathies like Alzheimer's or CTE that might be able to qualify individuals for anti-tau studies that today would not meet the inclusion-exclusion criteria for those studies.
When we think of the kinds of numbers you were looking at with NFL players compared to non-contact sport athletes, it's not a question of a lot of people happen to have really high Tau scores, and then when they're attracted to become members of the NFL, it's like it's clearly an indicator here.
It seems to be, but there's still so much to be learned about CTE as a disease. And we should have lots of lessons learned from Alzheimer's, the other tauopathy, where we're still learning, you know, after more than 100 years of knowing about this disease. But there's a lot more that needs to be learned. And we sometimes need to be careful. We don't get too far ahead of the science. The data looks quite incriminating as a disease condition. But then again, we're not doing autopsies of the general population to see what percentage of individuals have CTE that didn't participate in sports that involve repetitive head trauma. So that data set is kind of missing from the equation.
Right. And what we're talking about are averages. And you showed me the data. And, you know, there is a big range. So when you get to the average, you bring it down to the average, you're like, well, that's the average. Some of these people off the charts and some barely registered. So it's a question, it's got to be a good question of, wait a minute, well, what did they do? How did they perform? You know, when did these scores start appearing? And that sort of rolls back to, we have lots of kids going into sports of all kinds. We have no measurement on them. We don't know where they start, and we certainly don't know where they are over time.
Right. And so we're gaining information that could be quite valuable in making certain decisions. I think one of the things that jumps out at us is we believe there's a correlation between higher levels of Tau zones in individuals that start playing football at a younger age. Again, the hallmark of the disease is repetitive subconcussive blows, not concussion, but repetitive subconcussive blows to the head over long periods of time. So, if somebody starts playing tackle football at 8 years old, oftentimes by the time they show up at the NFL, they've been playing tackle football for 14 years. So perhaps that there should be a reconsideration at what age an individual should be considered to play tackle football. Perhaps it's not necessary at younger ages, but these are, just some observations, of many that are coming out of these studies.
You're listening to a special edition of TechNation, TechNation Health. I'm Moira Gunn, and my guest today is Jim Joyce. He's the chairman and CEO of Athlon Medical in San Diego and the executive chairman of its subsidiary, Exosome Sciences. Well, I happen to know you spent some time in the NFL. In fact, you played for the Broncos. What was your position?
I was a defensive end, and I always like to point out I was, in 1984 and 85, I was more of a professional blocking and tackling dummy for the Denver Broncos. it was a wonderful experience, and it's very interesting from the standpoint we're talking about CTE today, but in the playoffs at Mile High Stadium, in December of 1984, in the first round of the playoffs, we were playing the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the center for the Pittsburgh Steelers was Mike Webster, the subject of the concussion movie. And the Steelers had some pretty bad fortune as it relates to CTE. The guard that played next to Mike was Terry Long. Terry was diagnosed with CTE after he drank a gallon of antifreeze to try to commit suicide. Well, not to try. He was very successful and achieved his goal. And then a few years later, they had an offensive tackle, Justin Streisig, who was diagnosed with CTE after he drove his pickup truck at over 100 miles an hour into an oil tanker. So, some of the decisions that individuals make that are suffering from this disease condition, can be quite irrational. And our original research, I'm not an individual who's an expert in diagnostics, or we weren't experts in biomarkers. This was all, we call it kind of a skunk works project, but we were originally inspired to kind of look for a biomarker based on the death of Tom McHale, who was a former teammate of mine, and the second person diagnosed with CTE by the Boston University CTE Center.
And you knew him for many years.
Knew Tom for many years. Tom is from my hometown of Gaithersburg, Maryland. He played football at Gaithersburg High School for my dad, as did myself. We were teammates in high school, teammates at University of Maryland, and Tom had an eight-year career in the NFL.
So maybe it was lucky your career wasn't as long.
Perhaps. I'm very fortunate I was retired at such a young age.
Now, we're not just talking about research in the science lab here. You started with Athlon Medical, and this came off of that, Exosome Sciences, which is largely owned by Athlon Medical, but all of this was so important, you decided to make it a different company?
We did. We were cognizant that we can't confuse people to think that one company is doing both therapeutics and diagnostics. I guess I should point out that the fascinating thing about all of this is that it all intertwines. It's interesting how science works sometimes, where there's threads that attach everything we're doing. And a lot of it is structural, whereas in disease conditions, oftentimes people are trying to inhibit, if it's infectious viruses, they're trying to inhibit a very specific virus or limited strains of that virus from replicating as a means to control progression of that disease. We very much took a different approach. We are looking at structures. And where do we find a unique structure? And there's a structure that we really focused on that we thought diseases were utilizing to evade surveillance of the immune system. And they would coat themselves with this glycan shield. Viruses will coat themselves with this shield that they partially co-opt from your own cells during replication as a means to evade the surveillance of the immune system. And we saw that exosomes were doing the same thing in 2006, especially in oncology. Then we did work in infectious disease. But, you know, we had done a lot of work with high affinity biofiltration devices that have been now through FDA studies and are progressing in FDA studies. Have been in four human studies overseas, in one situation in the Ebola outbreak in 2014. Our device was used with remarkable success in a physician that had multiple organ failure and was comatose. But we would see a structure, and it was very interesting to us how we could create a broad spectrum mechanism to address viruses with this structure. Then we started looking at tumor-derived exosomes, and we're doing work there, and we now know that these particles are no longer cellular debris, that they're actually directly immunosuppressive in cancer patients, that their quantity in circulation correlates with disease progression. And recently, there's the landmark study that they're actually seeds that allow for the spread and creation of metastases, which is, you know, attributed to upwards of 90% of cancer deaths. But a lot of this came when we were looking for structures. We connected to exosomes when they were still considered to be just cellular debris. And that's why we were looking at exosomes in a neurological condition with CTE, because we believe they're involved in cell-to-cell communication. They transport disease-promoting particles, but we also believe that they could move across the blood-brain barrier, and they could be carrying cargo that could identify neurological disorders. So that's really what caused us to look at these particles as part of the tech study that we were invited to participate in by the Boston University group.
And you're going to continue to look and continue to look at all this data.
We can't help ourselves. And it's fascinating to see this. And now I think what's exciting is as the science catches up and as more and more researchers get into the field, we're now seeing, you know, in the last 6 months or so, publications where researchers are now looking at exosomes transporting tau protein or beta amyloid as now being potential therapeutic targets, perhaps the missing link that are transporting the primary components, the tau itself, the beta amyloid itself, that could be therapeutic targets to help in Alzheimer's disease or CTE. So that's something we're extremely cognizant of as well at Athlon Medical.
As we start to see tau load increase, we can maybe look for treatments right there.
We can, but you know, we, like I said, it goes back to the former NFL players. Can we do something to help them today the research is going to go on for years. But if we can show this correlation, maybe tau zone levels in former NFL players as compared to Alzheimer's patients, and find a way to qualify for them for studies today, I mean, we could cut 5 to 10 years off the timeline to get them enrolled in these types of studies, which, you know, might prove to be very, very beneficial.
Now, is this a blood test, a tissue? How do you do this?
It's a blood test.
It's just a blood test.
It's a blood test. And fortunately, these particles that we're looking at are very stable, and they're quite prevalent in the circulatory system. You know, I think for years people have been looking at tau protein itself, free tau in the circulatory system, and it's not stable. It's kind of fleeting. It's kind of trying to find a needle in the haystack, whereas with these particles, they're just very prevalent. You need to sort through and be able to distinguish, you know, what cargoes different exosomes are carrying.
Now, best estimate, worst estimate, obviously, how soon could such a test come on the market? How much work do you have to do?
I think we need to do more work in terms of the validation. I mean, 78 former NFL subjects and just 16 controls and 33 Alzheimer's patients. It's very informative, and it tells you that, you know, there's a signal there. There's something we need to pursue, but you need to, you know, obtain a lot more evidence.
We don't know what the number means.
Yeah, we don't, and you need to have a statistically significant number of subjects to look at, both from a control standpoint, other tauopathies like Alzheimer's, as well as former NFL subjects. So the one thing we're doing in the near future is we recognized that there's a lot of research now starting to advance. We've been invited to participate in a follow-on study by the Boston University group, but it's a 7-year study supported by NIH. It's designed to learn more about CTE. It's designed to continue to validate biomarkers, you know, such as our biomarker. But it's a 7-year study.
I'm speaking with Jim Joyce, the chairman and CEO of Athlon Medical in San Diego, an executive chairman of Exosome Sciences. We'll talk more after a break. Podcasts of TechNation, BiotechNation, and TechNation Health are available at iTunes, Stitcher, and other podcast syndication outlets. Coming up in the second half of our show, more on this special edition of TechNation Health, eye tracking for everything from medical diagnostics to improved performance in sports. And Dr. Daniel Kraft talks about disruption in medical care. Stay with us. You're listening to a special edition of TechNation, TechNation Health. I'm speaking with Jim Joyce, the chairman and CEO of Athlon Medical in San Diego, an executive chair of Exosome Sciences.
And this is just an example of where we step back and we said, well, I think if we can run a very controlled study just looking at tau zone measurements and probably enroll a sufficient number of subjects in, you know, 6 to 9 months. And really, again, when I talk about cutting off timelines to find solutions, this is an example where, you know, we don't want to wait 7 years to continue to validate the Tau Zone. We want to be able to run the studies today in former NFL players, you know, who, as I tell them, they need to step back into the field of play and participate in these studies.
You were saying earlier that some of the test is looking at their psychomotor skills, their memory skills. Many of them have to know that something's not quite right.
You can break it down into a couple different classes. One is there's a very heightened sense of paranoia that individuals that played football have today. I mean, normal things like, where'd I put my keys? You know, oh, well, no, I must have CTE. You know, the disease, the media is creating a high level of sensitivity to have former players be thinking about this. But also, there's some individuals that are having some very, very real issues. And if you kind of know anything about the mindset of a former NFL player, they're generally very proud. And in their family, they've generally always been the hero or a pillar of strength, you know, a warrior. And they don't like to show weakness. And with family members, especially. So oftentimes, you know, after the game is done, they don't really have people to talk to, or they don't. Who can they express, you know, a level of sensitivity or a weakness or a concern with? So because I played and because of the research we're doing, you know, I hear from former players, and some of them aren't doing so good, and some of them know that they have something going on, and they go out of their way, some of them, to isolate themselves, to disengage from society. You know, and it's a very, very sad situation, and it's some of these factors that kind of drive our emphasis on finding solutions.
Jim Joyce is the chairman and CEO of Athlon Medical in San Diego and the executive chairman of its subsidiary, Exosome Sciences. More information is available at exosomesciences.com. That's Exo, E-X-O, Some, S-O-M-E, exosomesciences.com. Well, we've been